Welcome back to the 16mm Film Crew podcast. I'm Cindy.
And I'm Dale.
You can watch us on YouTube. You can like and comment on our YouTube videos and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can support us on Anchor. You can listen to us everywhere podcasts are found. You can rate and review our podcast at 16mm Film Crew Podcast. You can visit us on our website at www.16mmfilmcrew.com. So this week we are talking about Wouldn't You Know It, a show all about a podcast. We're talking about Only Murders in the Building. And we're also discussing Disney Plus's Moon Knight. So let's give you your synopsis. So for Only Murders in the Building 2021, three strangers share an obsession with true crime and suddenly find themselves wrapped up in one. A grisly death occurs inside their exclusive Upper West Side apartment building. The trio suspects murder and employs the precise knowledge of true crime to investigate the truth. Perhaps even more explosive are the lies they tell one another. Soon, the endangered trio comes to realize a killer might be living amongst them as they race to decipher the mounting clues before it's too late. So this series, it stars Steve Martin, Selena Gomez, Aaron Dominguez, I think, Martin Short, and Amy Ryan. And it was created by Steve Martin and John Hoffman. So, Dale, what did you think about the show?
I don't know. I find it kind of interesting. The one that stuck out to me the most was Selena Gomez is a really talented actress. I hope, you know, she starts focusing more on acting than singing. I know she might want to sing. She might like to sing. That's not, ma'am, Miss Gomez. That's not your wheelhouse. Acting is definitely for you. Maybe realize how talented she is as an actress, and how Martin Short and Steve Martin and Martin Short, have they still got it as far as being like comedic icons in Hollywood? So
yeah, definitely. I think their dynamic is so good, and that really pulled me in. Like, I wasn't like too sure about the show when I first started. Like, I wasn't like super excited to watch it, but once I started that first episode, I was like, oh, this is really good. Because Steve Martin is like the straight man, and then Martin Short is like the eccentric one. I thought that dynamic was fun. But I actually like all three of them together. Selena Gomez is like the mysterious character. Mabel, I liked their whole little trio. I will say that Selena Gomez is, I don't know, something happened to like her face or something, because she doesn't make like more than like three faces in this. So I'm not really sure what happened there. I don't think this was like her strongest acting moment. I actually think that she did better in like the Disney Channel stuff. But I wasn't like in love with what she was doing with the character. But I do think that all together they work really well. And I also think that like the supporting cast, like just the other people who live in the building, really made the show so good. Like all of the... I'm coming to understand that when it comes to series, that it's really your supporting cast and like your background actors who really make the show, not necessarily the main characters. So like they were giving me so much life. Like all the people who lived in the building were just hilarious and amazing and crazy, and it was like so entertaining to watch. Like so entertaining. So I guess we can get into it more. I think that one of I don't know, I like this show because like it is about a podcast, and I feel like maybe because this is what we do, like it's, I don't know, I felt like more of a kinship with it. But I just loved how like they understood, like, okay, we have like, we want to talk about this thing that we love, because that's what kind of brought them all together, is that they love this true crime podcast and they want to start their own one when there was a murder in their building. But I think they also knew like there's an audience that they wanted to reach. So they knew like you had to like make certain inflections with your voice. You had to be captivating as you told these stories. Like they were very like, I remember there's one episode where Martin Short, like they're following Selena Gomez, and Martin Short is like holding onto a mic, like a boom mic, trying to like record someone like in the middle of the action. It was just hilarious. So there's something about that I just found really like endearing and like funny, but also kind of relatable. Like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. I get the whole behind the scenes stuff. Like, Mar, like, you gotta do that takeover again, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I really went through the whole editing process of finalizing, putting together the podcast. I do think they kind of went to the extreme to show, like, extreme to a degree. I do like the fact that they were fans of a podcast and that they decided to do this. What they did was they really showed a generational disconnect between generations by having a bunch of old guys who are into podcasts now try to put one together. Like Martin Short, like, he goes crazy and buys all this new equipment that they didn't need and stuff like that. I love, like what you said before, I think when Martin Short and Steve Martin are together, they're like Laurel and Hardy, that straight man and funny guy. But when it's all three of them, it's almost like a more serious version of the Three Stooges, with Selena Gomez playing the balancing one, where the old two older guys play the whole bumbling buffoon. I really enjoy the tender moments where they're talking, like, with Selena's mom, or they're talking with the guy, like, stuff like that. Like they really realize, oh, she's just a kid. Like, that we've brought in to our a group of old men who are talking about murders and stuff. You know, I thought, like, they really tried. Because, like you said, in the show, Selena, her character is the straight person. She's, like, a serious straight man. So she doesn't really emote facially-wise, like, happy expressions. They kind of highlighted her character more, saying she's like that because of, you know, for her friend dying, other friend in jail, and now her other friend is killed. So it kind of makes sense why her character isn't as open with her emotions when she's acting. So I do think Selena did have that, you know, that serious, because like you said, with Disney Channel and stuff, our vision of Selena is just playing funny characters and stuff like that. So it was really interesting and refreshing to see her play like a serious person, and which this group needed, because all three of them couldn't be funny, because even to a degree, there's sometimes, depending on who's interacting with who, like, Martin Short would be the straight, serious person, or Steve Martin would be the straight, serious person. But for overall, it was Selena. So, yeah.
I also think that Selena's best get is being a businesswoman. Like, her skincare and beauty stuff, like, that's probably most where she shines the best, is Rare Beauty. That's just one girl's opinion. Anyways, I think that... But you're right, though. Like, the dynamic was really important. I feel like it also kind of helped. Well, like, you don't really get to see much television with older people. Like, you don't really see that often. So it was nice to have, like, yes, two comedy legends, but just two, like, main characters who were, like, over the age of 50 being, like, the main characters of the show. And then having, like, a younger person kind of be in that mix. It kind of quells all those, like, intergenerational issues that we might be feeling, animosity we might feel towards, like, boomers and whatever. Like, this show, I think, kind of brought it together nicely, so where it's like, no, you can appreciate the fact that, yes, these people are older, but that doesn't also mean they have everything figured out either. Like, they're still, like,
learning.
Steve Martin is trying to find love. Martin Shore is, like, getting evicted from his apartment. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're still, like, everyone's still learning and growing. Like, it doesn't mean much that you're just older. It's just, you know, you're just older. Biologically, you're just older. Like, there's still, like, stuff that you gotta figure out. And I liked that. I liked that everyone was, like, on their own journeys. In terms of the actual, like, murder, I think that it felt a little convoluted in some places, but I don't even think that it was, like, literally, like, about that. Like, I feel like the murder in the building was, like, just like a foundation to kind of build on with the characters and with their own stories. It wasn't really.
Yeah.
Once we figured out what happened, I wasn't like, I was just like, okay. I guess I wasn't as invested in that as I was in them trying to start their own podcast and like figuring out what that's about. So.
Yeah, it kind of did fell apart like the last couple episodes where like, yeah, we don't know how we did it, but we're going to roll with this theory. And then you as a fan, like honestly, you as a fan watching, you end up relating to the fans of their podcast, because you're like, yeah, that what your theory doesn't make any sense at all. You guys are wrong. So you're like, you're agreeing with, like, you've watched like seven episodes with these people watching the case. So you're honestly, you are now the podcast listener as well. So when they're trying to solve, you know, the crime or release what they think it is, you're just like the three people, the three or four people they met outside their apartment. Like, no, I think you guys are wrong. And you're like, yeah, no, you guys are wrong. So when part to be expected. I do only criticism I would have. As far as I'm showing the different age dynamics. I did love the fact that because it shows no matter how old we are or what age, everybody, you're right, everybody has a problem, everybody's broken. You know, of course, we talked about Selena dealing with death of multiple friends and stuff like that. You have, you know, like him getting kicked out, being evicted from an apartment, and the lack of relationship he has with his son for Steve Martin, and him talking about all his Hollywood, all his Broadway failures, you know, mm-hmm. and him struggling. Mm-hmm. Got, you know, Steve Martin talking about he was like a one-hit wonder as an actor, you know, only known for one thing, and still trying to hold on to some semblance of fame, and also mm-hmm. dealing with his issues of forming relationships with his with people because he assumed negatively that he was just like his father. And I do mm-hmm. think a lot of people can relate to the problems, particularly less Selena, but of Steve Martin and Martin Short's their characters. Because it feels like, you know, everybody now is kind of, as we get older, you know, in this digital landscape, everybody's creating content, like we're creating content as well. And we look at other people and we be like that sense of imposter syndrome. And we always look mm-hmm. at other, we always see our misses first instead of our successes, you know, and we take those things for granted. And I do relate to, you know, Steve Skater to a degree, that, you know, fear of being like your parents. Everybody sees the good qualities in their parents, but as you get older, you kind of recognize the bad, because as you get older, you realize this is what I'm doing this because my parents did this, and so you become kind of withdrawn to a degree. So I related to the life experiences of those two characters more than Selena, even though Selena was a younger person on the show.
I really related to Martin Short's character, and I don't know why, but there's just something about him. I was like, yeah, when he texts everyone that a member of his family is killed and it's his dog, and his just dog is just poisoned. Like, there's something about that just, I was like, yeah, same energy. Like, I get it.
the dog is a member. If anybody who has a pet understands, yeah, no, the dog is a member of the family, man. The dog gets sick, you're gonna, yeah, so. No.
Yeah, I got that. I felt it. that was so funny. But yeah, I just really liked the dynamic. I thought that was good. So, and I think that's probably what people will, that they came for, that's probably what they'll stay for the second season that's coming out next month, is these characters and seeing what happens to them. But I think we were listening to some Variety event with one of the showrunners from Only Murders in the Building. And I think he was just as surprised about the success as like maybe all of us was. I think Steve Martin and his writing partner had this idea for like so many years, like over 10 years, and they finally got it developed. So yeah, I like these things that seem like kind of, maybe they might be like a one-off, but they're not. Like, people actually really are into it and like are into what's being presented. I think that's fun because it was a passion project for the most part. So I think it definitely reads that way.
Yeah, it's obvious it took them a long time to get the show off the ground. Considering, I don't, I know like murder shows are popular, like, but mm-hmm. I don't think they're as popular anymore. Like, murder shows, true crime stuff, are they still as popular anymore?
I think so. I think a lot of people are into true crime.
Yeah, okay. Because I know those shows came out. You had True Detective come out, and you had all these, you know, murder, like the running joke culturally of like women like these murder shows for some reason. So yeah. So I didn't know the true crime, like the whole podcast zeitgeist and universe was actually still cultural relevance.
You know? It's really big, yeah. Which makes sense. And I guess doing shows about things that are like culturally relevant might date it, but I think maybe because we're not focusing like too much on that aspect and we're focusing more on the characters, it probably will be okay. Yeah. So yeah, that's my guess.
And to your credit, I think you said earlier something about the strength of these shows like this, like sitcoms and ensembles, is usually not the lead characters, it's the supporting characters. Like, show like this, like, in talking about the show where you actually need good secondary characters coming in and out to actually bounce off and push the characters forward. Like, the perfect example, obviously, would be Seinfeld. But if it was just the four of those guys, four of them all the time, Seinfeld wouldn't have been as popular. But it's the characters who aren't interested to interact really sell the show. And I think this project is a perfect example of that. Because I don't think we'd be as into it if we had just seen the three of them the whole time. And not having to bounce off people, like, you deal with Super, you deal with her friend, you deal with Selena's mom, talk about you dragging my daughter into this, you deal with, you know, Steve Martin trying to find, you know, love, and all of a sudden you see Bugs Bunny and Porky Pig come out of nowhere in a hallucination, he's still talking to them like they're there, you know, you got Martin Short's son popping in and out as, like, a veterinarian, and they're going back and forth about his father's financial struggle. So yeah, I think what really pushed the show was all the other characters. And I think the ones that probably pushed it most were the listeners as well. Because it's almost like the listeners became a caricature of them. Like, because they were at that point listening to Murder Mystery podcasts and stuff, and then now they're the ones who people are listening to. So that's like a full circle moment in a way.
Yeah. I liked seeing Amy Ryan in this just because I loved her in The Office, like Michael and Holly forever. That was amazing. But I just loved seeing her back in this. I didn't love what they did with her character because, you know, spoiler, like, she's a killer, but that wasn't great. The payoff wasn't great, but I did like seeing her in the show just because I like her.
I mean, I don't know, only me personally, thinking about, like, I used to portrayals and stuff with her character, I think the only person I had an issue with was Martin Short's character. And I have a big problem. Well, I shouldn't say a big problem. It's really concerning to me that, you know, that people who are artsy, especially if you're a guy, you're forever portrayed as feminine. Like, if you look at the media landscape, whenever the character is, like, this artsy, an artsy character, artistic, they're always painted in a feminine way. And I'm talking about looking back even as far as, like, High School Musical. Like, the brother was painted as a feminine. Yes, some people in the theater are gay, but there are a lot of regular, straight, masculine men who are into theater. So I always find it odd that, especially this being made by Martin, by Steve Martin. Like, you're in Hollywood, you're in the industry, you know, creative people come in a wide palette of colors. Why?
Yeah.
Huh?
He had a wife.
But I'm saying, though, he wasn't gay. I'm saying, no, but his characterization, you know what I'm saying? Like, the way.
How you read that? Oh, I didn't read that. I didn't read it like that.
Okay. I know he was straight, but, like,
no, the over, fact that like, you're, that you read it as him being feminine, because I didn't read it that way. I just read it as him being eccentric and just, like, not paying attention to his responsibilities.
To me, it came off as, you know, like, that flamboyancy. I don't know. Maybe that's a reflection on me, in my opinion. I hope I don't come off as a bigot or, you know, whatever, homophobic, because I'm not. But that seems to me to be the constant depiction that I've always seen of the creative people. So. I don't know. I'm aware he was. I know he was straight. He has a son. He has a wife. But, like, for some reason, the portrayal of, you know, creative people always has to be, you know, somewhat flamboyant. And yeah, I don't know. That's just my weird rant ish, I guess. So
I liked that there was diversity, and I'm not talking about, like, there was black characters or there were queer characters. I mean, like, there were people who weren't able-bodied or, like, were, I'm sorry. I can't, it's the guy who is, like, their main sponsor. His son is deaf. So they built a whole episode around that where there was no speech and there was ASL as the form of language. And I thought that was so good. Like, I feel like there's like a couple of episodes of television that I've watched where there has been no dialogue. And I always feel like those episodes are very interesting because you do have to find other ways to be creative and to communicate certain things without talking. So I really enjoyed that episode because I was like, oh my God, like, wait, we're like 10 minutes in and no one has said anything yet. And then, you know, you realize it's from his point of view. And then you have everyone kind of going along with that same theme. No one says anything. I just really thought that was cool. I liked how they incorporated that and like built a whole episode around this one character and around that specific disability. And they still made it interesting. Like, Selena Gomez and Martin Short trying to like figure out what's going on at the funeral home. Like, all that stuff was really interesting. So I thought it was really entertaining. And bravo to everyone who's behind that.
I love that is a wonderful thing you bring up, because they always, especially how they used him as, you know, the lead suspect in a way, because it goes it goes on the note, like, people with disabilities are usually seen but ignored. So the fact that he mentioned, like, I'm a physical person, I'm always here, but no one ever notices me just because solely the fact I'm deaf. Like, and that's really disheartening, because there's nothing wrong with him. It's like, he's not like he's out of your line of sight because he's in a wheelchair or anything like that. He's literally right there, but you ignore him just on the fact because he can't hear. So you assume you could do whatever you want. But yeah, I do like the fact, I think now it's become more of a trend where they do focus on, you know, disabled people, particularly deaf hearing people, where they do the sound work. I think that's post like The Sound of Metal, everybody's been more intricate have been integrating that aspect more with the characters in their stories to a degree. Like, I remember when he puts the headphones on the sun and we as an audience are in the sun's like head, where all we get is muffled tones and all you see is his father, you know, moving his lips, and we don't get anything. I love those touches, you know, because it proves that you're actually paying attention with those things. Because they could have just been lazy and just played nothing, like no audio, nothing, but the fact that he made it muffled and everything really proves that they're paying attention to those issues.
So yeah, I agree. It was really well done. Okay, so overall thoughts, let's rate it. What are you thinking?
As a show, like, this is weird because you can't really rate a show on the same scale as a movie, especially episodic in a way, knowing there's also, like, if it was a one-off, maybe, but there is a second season. As a whole, probably give it a 7 out of 10. That doesn't mean it's bad. That doesn't mean it's middle ground. I mean, for me, the few stumbling blocks were with the story and the expectations that were set up for it. That they go that way. It does that because of a murder mystery. I do feel like a lot of the writing could have been a lot better. I do think they relied too much to a degree on the comedy, which then again, it's a comedian. Is the lead on the show, so he's going to lean heavy into the comedy a little bit too much instead of the seriousness, because, like, it's a young girl and two older guys, 50 plus, solving a mystery, getting chased and getting kidnapped. I mean, there should be at least a little bit more, you know, seriousness to it to a degree. But yeah, no, still an amazing show. And it got a second season, so that proves that they probably fixed those issues or opinions that I have with it or other people. But yeah, 7 out of 10 seems fair. Always room for improvement, you know. Yeah.
I'm going to give it like a 7.5. Yeah, 7.5 out of 10. I thought the characters were great, but yeah, the story definitely needed work. I think the thing with like murder mystery, anything, is that you are relying on the audience. You're relying on the story to keep and build that tension. And when you have 10 episodes, it can only stretch so far before some of it starts to feel like filler. And there were definitely some filler episodes in this. So it's kind of difficult. And that's why doing season 2, I don't know how great of an idea that might be, just because, again, you're setting that up to being like a big murder thing, and then you're trying to have to carry that over the 10 episode order. So some things might get a little lost in there, and I don't love that. Unless they made it like shorter and tighter and more concise, I would be on board with it. Who knows what it will turn out to be. But I do think that like the story wasn't wonderful, but I think that the characters held me, like held enough together to get me to the finish end, to the finish line, where I was like, yeah, I enjoyed the show. Like I laughed. There were some moments in there where that were kind of serious, and I liked how they handled it. I liked what I saw in terms of diversity and inclusion. But yeah, it definitely needs more work. Maybe get better, you know, in season two. So that's what I'm kind of hoping Selena can give me a little bit more energy this season. But we'll see. We'll see. So yeah, the new show comes out next month on Hulu. So make sure that you guys watch it.
Yeah, that's a big problem with, like, I think American shows, like these kind of experimental ones on streaming platforms for the most part. Once they get that sliver of success, like now we need to set up for a season two. Where I kind of do prefer foreign markets, like your Korean films and some of your British products, where it's a limited series. Like this is it. We're only writing for one season, and we're going to tell the best story possible.
So, Moon Knight, Stephen Grant, and mercenary Mark Spector investigate the mysteries of the Egyptian gods from inside the same body. So, Oscar Isaac is in this as Mark Spector / Moon Knight, and Stephen Grant / Mr. Knight, which are two alters of a man with dissociative identity disorder, with Meg Calloway, Kareem El Hakim, F. Murray Abraham, and Ethan Hawke. So, yeah. I watched this. This is a Disney Plus. This is part of Marvel's Phase 4 situation. I didn't love this series. I think I mentioned this when I talked about it last week in my review. Mm-hmm. My Life Good review. I didn't love it. It was okay.
It was okay.
Yeah. What did you think?
Same. Like I said, my initial review is the fact that it's a really awkward, slow burn. Mm. Takes a while to get, you know, the ball rolling, gets you drawn into it. I do love like the whole, what's the word I'm looking for? I love the fact that they're showing more aspects of different cultures and different, you know, different cultures, different religions, you know, the view of the afterlife. Saw the same thing with Black Panther, how they viewed the afterlife differently than, you know, this one in this movie. I love the fact that Disney is now delving into their more, not just diverse characters, because even though, yes, Moon Knight, the character himself, I think is, you know, Jewish American, and one other alter ego is British. But the god and the setting of the show is vehemently Egypt and Middle East and stuff like that. I love like Disney's now being more intentional. Like, we have all these diverse heroes. Let's start moving them, which I appreciate because the fact that apparently if you have ample time, you've watched, you know, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, they kind of like wiped all the Avengers off the table. Like, you're like, almost everybody's dead. So at least now the team potentially should be, you know, a little bit more diverse. I love the portrayal of, you know, the dissociative identity disorder, and I love how they, because I love how they delve more to it. I think the comic kind of uses it to a degree as a running joke, but this, they kind of take it more seriously and how it really affects people's lives and stuff, which I think is an amazing turnaround, because I do think Disney as a whole, you know, Kevin Feige and all the involved got a lot of flack with Thor in Endgame, dealing with his mental issues post Infinity War, where he just gains weight and plays video games. Like, that's a serious sign of depression. And the whole time they made hey, Thor, you're fat jokes the whole time. Whereas this, they understand how, especially these projects, what grief does to you psychologically. So I think they're being more intention with the actual human side of these heroes, not just the heroic part, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, I thought, that's the thing, like, when I was going into this, like, when I was watching the trailer and they had Kid Cudi playing over the trailer, and I was like, oh, this is going to be so good. Like, this is going to be a lot more serious, a lot more in-depth. Like, it just felt like a like an indie movie, but like Disney Plus, like whatever a Disney Plus indie movie would look like. But then it started off, and I was like, okay, I'm really interested in this. Like, I don't know, I was game, and then it kind of moved into like a weird spot where it was like, I don't know, everything was just very like heavy, like special effects and CGI, and that pulled me out of it. I thought the cool things about like him, like towards the end when he was in the mental hospital and he was kind of going back and forth between Mark and Steven, and he was talking to Ethan Hawke's character, like that was very interesting to me. I was like, oh my God, what is going on? Like, this is, I want to know more about this. But then we would get like him on that like boat in the afterlife. And I was like, I don't know. It was just, I think the balance of trying to get something like really deep and interesting, character driven, you know, let's talk about this disorder, and then having like big fight scenes with gods fighting each other, and then Mark and Steven fighting the, you know, other like followers and stuff, and trying to balance that. I don't know if the scales are balanced. That's an inside joke if you watch the show. I don't know if the scales balanced for me in this series. I wanted a little something. I don't know what I was expecting, really. I do applaud the attempt. I applaud the effort of them actually doing it. I love that it was focused in Egyptian culture. I love the music were like Egyptian musicians. I love that it was directed by a person of that heritage. Like, I loved it. It was giving me like Mr. Robot vibes, but just Disney. So I think Mr. Robot kind of did this thing better with the whole, and it was, Mr. Robot is kind of like a superhero movie, but just like technology instead of like fight scenes, but whatever. I think that Oscar Isaac did a great job as well. I was not a fan of the English accent, I will say that. So every time he did the English accent, it was hard. Like, it took me out of it a little bit, because I just thought it wasn't good. It wasn't great. I'm sorry. I love you, Oscar. You're amazing. But the English accent, not great. So that was kind of hard for me to get over, and he kept it the entire show because the character of what Mark Spector, is that who it is? No, Stephen Grant. Like, Stephen he Grant. Is British. So he's just, nah. And I like it. I liked the, what's her name? Her name is May in real life, but the main girl.
Oh, Mark's wife.
Mark's wife.
Layla?
Was it Lisa? Layla? Something like that. I liked her. I thought she was really good. And I actually did like some of the action sequences too. That's not, I didn't mean that I didn't like it. I just meant that like it was weird trying to balance these two very, that seem, what could seem like two very diametrically opposed things, like very intimate character studies and very big and large CGI filled action sequences. Like, they seemed kind of rough to kind of balance. But I will say that the action sequences that I did see, I did like. However, someone else on YouTube mentioned this, that Marvel literally ends every single one of their properties in a fight scene. And I thought that was an interesting point, because it's like, some of it doesn't need it, but okay. They gotta get a fight scene, so whatever. And it always has to take place like in the sky. Like, it's, I don't know, it's just really...
sky or someplace dark and gloomy. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
where you can't really see what's going on. But anyways, yeah, I thought it was good. I liked Ethan Hawke as a villain. I thought he was really good. Trying to stop people from doing, like, killing people before they can, like, do something terrible is an interesting idea and dangerous. So I thought that was cool. But I think they could have done more with his character, too. I just feel like they kind of... there was just, like, a little, like, 10 inches more that we could have just gone. And I don't feel like we met our potential in the show. So, and I don't know if they're going to be picked up for a second season either, so I'm not really sure about that. But
Those yeah, I am, like you mentioned, Ethan Hawke. I was surprised when he showed up. Ethan Hawke. I was surprised when he showed up because for a lot of people, they only know him as the Training Day, and that's it. But he's had a long, like,
really? Oh wow! I thought people know him from the trilogy, the Before Midnight trilogy. No, anyway.
Boyhood, Boyhood, and stuff like that.
Sure.
I don't think anybody, you know, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, the last time I think regular people actually saw him was in Northmen. But yeah, I'm happy. You know, he's got this chance to, you know, do what he does. But yeah, no, the show. The way this show is set up, I don't think it would do a second season. I think the only show that they were planning for doing a second season it was, you know, Winter Soldier and Falcon kind of thing. I think they announced or they said they had plans for a Scarlet Witch solo movie. I'm fine with this idea of, you know, releasing these, you know, short episodic things for all the new characters you're going to introduce in the future while keeping your Spider-Man and all your other still surviving Avengers and stuff as your main characters, because to drop them in like a film and to truncate their whole origin and journey to becoming a hero in 2 hours is not possible. Like if this movie, if this show, like how we said, it takes a while to get into it, had this been a movie and that whole piece of getting into that in the movie was about 15 minutes of understanding and figuring out Mark and getting after the show, if that was like the first 15 to 30 minutes of the movie, that would have been worse. Like, because honestly, when you're dealing with movies, you only mention like, only remember the beginning and the end. The middle is kind of where all the action, fun stuff, but people usually key in on those two parts. So if you're doing this as a show and that slow burn of actually getting into the show happened, I don't think it would have generated the same reaction that it has now, the same positive reaction it has now. So.
All right, yeah. I might give it like the 6 out of 10.
Same. I know you didn't like the accent that he used for Steven, but I think it works because
I hated it.
It might not be an accurate English accent because let's be honest, I'm Americans. Everybody on this side of the world doesn't do British accents well, but I do think it kind of works. It kind of works for him to use that kind of annoying kind of accent. Kind of weak and demure in a way. It does work because that's what Steven is. Steven actually, in him using the accent and making it kind of off-putting and not 100% like accurate, actually worked because he shows the progression of becoming more confident. You know, so yeah.
Okay. He was trying to do a Cockney accent, and there are ways to do it correctly. So it's not like he couldn't do it. I don't know, because you're right. There's a very small number of Americans who know how to do English accents well. There are a couple. I think we've watched movies where there's been a couple of people who have
Johnny Depp, done it. Robert
Emma Downey Stone Jr. in The Favorite did a great job. Yeah. Timothée Chalamet in The King, great job. So it's not like you can't do it. It's just like there's just small. It's a smaller pool of people who can. So it's just. I think Oscar was like, I went to Juilliard, so like I worked in England, so I know how to do an English accent, and that's what he did.
I don't know. It worked for me. I was on. It worked for me. But yeah, so now moving on to the box office stuff to put up here and a stamp on all this Marvel stuff. Of course, you know, Doctor Strange 2 continues its dominance with the second weekend of making $21 million. I think the first weekend it made $678, if I remember correctly. So it continues that run of, you know, knocking out of the park in multiple. I think it had a decrease of total gain and loss, it dropped by like 67%, but still to drop by 67% and still bring it in between weekends, 61 million is a lot. And then you have, you know, Universal's the bad guys now coming out more prominently. The Firestarter, which everybody thought was going to be amazing, which is led by Zac Efron and is based on a Stephen King book. It didn't really do much in the market. I do think because people are still doing the Doctor Strange thing. So anytime you release your movie in the midst of a Marvel thing, especially when a lot of people didn't see it the first opening weekend, and the busiest times for movies are the weekends, because during the week, everybody works. So you release it on the weekend when it hasn't been, it's still, I consider the first 2 weeks of a movie being out, the first 2 weekends, it's still its debut to me, because people only watch really movies on the weekend. So if you decide to release that week, 2 weekend window with a Marvel movie, you're not going to do as well on number wise. But yeah, so, and I'm kind of, I don't know, I think the Doctor Strange numbers to a degree are kind of artificially inflated to a way, because like we said, we got a 67% drop in viewership. But remember, when the movie released, you could go, there were like some theaters where, like, there's a tweet on Twitter by Matt Stringer, if you go look, I think, and like the AMC in Times Square had like 70 screenings for that one movie. So, yeah, so the 70%, the 60% drop makes sense, being that debut weekend, like, theaters were just running that movie the whole time. What I do feel is kind of unfair, because Marvel kind of boxes out any other movie that comes within, at least with DC, like the DC movies, other movies were coming out around Batman. Even though Batman was the biggest draw, it didn't dominate and take over. Like, movie theaters didn't say, yeah, we're only going to play Batman only. They still played other movies, where it seems like with Disney in a general, whether it's Star Wars or Marvel movie, they kind of say, look, we're going to take out this whole window and we're just going to play our stuff and you got to deal with it. So I do think to a degree, Disney kind of props up the numbers for these movies on the debut weekend. For the box office weekend now, for the numbers, the massive wave of Unbearable talent drops from 8 to 10. A debut movie from called Family Camp by Roadside Attraction debuted at 9. It's kind of like the story of two opposite families coming together, where the dads are kind of, you know, struggling to keep their families and marriages together. They compete for a camp trophy. Kind of reminds me a bit of Cheaper by the Dozen, that whole theme where the both families are battling. So it's kind of that vibe with that movie. Lost City at 8, The Northman at 7, Fantastic Beasts at 6, Everything Everywhere at Once holds steady at 5, which I think it has one of the smallest viewership decreases between. It dropped by 6% between the two weekends, but it increased in theaters. It was shown in almost 200 more theaters. So, and it being its eighth week, usually there's a drop off of the amount of theaters it's shown, but it's increasing as the word of mouth gets on about it. Of course, Firestarter debuted at 4, Sonic the Hedgehog held steady at 3, The Bad Guys at 2, and Doctor Strange at number 1. The international numbers at the moment so far are The Last Bus, a domestic film in South Africa is their number one movie there. In Finland, Downton Abbey, The New Era is their number one movie. And China, it's The Bad Guys.
So I guess piggybacking off of what you were talking about when it comes to Disney and the box office, Ethan Hawke also had like something to say, I think, while he was promoting Moon Knight, where he was talking about that, like, when he was coming up, there wasn't Rotten Tomatoes, there wasn't IMDb or Letterboxd, there wasn't, like, reviews coming out, like, weeks before the movie has even dropped, and that helped people just, like, go to the movies and experience a film, and then let it mean whatever it meant to them, and not have to be influenced by all these other things, saying if it's good or not, and also not even like watching a movie more than once to really get a full interpretation of like what the movie was trying to do, and kind of just seeing one viewing and like forming your opinions and putting it on Twitter or whatever. I thought that was a really good point, just because it's like, and that really, it was powerful to me, because I think because of what we do, it's like we have to take in all the information as we're reviewing everything. So that's kind of a part of our, subconsciously or consciously, a part of our movie watching experience. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting because it's like we should just maybe like not care so much about like what everyone else is. Not we. I'm not speaking generally. I'm just talking about
me personally.
Yeah. Not to take into everything else is saying and just like experience it. And then if we like it, like it. If we don't like it, don't like it. And that's okay if it doesn't like line up with public opinion. So yeah, I just thought that was a good point because it's true. I think what Marvel's Disney's doing more specifically with their movies is kind of saying like there's this one type of thing that everyone's into. And that's not necessarily true because like you said, Everything Everywhere All at Once is holding steady in the box office and it came out like weeks ago. Almost a month ago. And I think that was just from word of mouth, people being like, this movie's really good or whatever, like, go see it. So, like, yeah, it all comes together. But anyways, moving on to the news. There's only, it's not much news going on, but one thing that came up today was that Aquaman's director, James Wan, unfollowed Amber Heard on Instagram today. And basically, there was, like, a couple of executives from, like, Warner Brothers and stuff who also unfollowed her. Amber Heard is a very controversial figure right now. I think that's okay to say. And it's interesting. It's interesting not that he unfollowed her, but more that he really fought for her to stay on Aquaman when all this stuff was going down. He really was adamant that, because I think there were, like, petitions and stuff going on around that she should fired from the movie, and he like put his foot down. It's like, no, she's not going anywhere. She will be in this film. However, her role has been significantly pared down. I think that news story also dropped, and she also mentioned it in her testimony today. So I think it's interesting that like at one point he was really like gung-ho, she will be a part of this film. And then as stuff has started to kind of tilt in a different direction, yeah. He, along with some other executives at Warner Brothers, are taking steps to maybe back away. Maybe, I don't know how seriously we can take like these little cues from social media. I'm not really sure if they mean much, but it's an interesting development.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like looking at the petition, it's at 1 million, almost at 1 million people have signed it to get it removed. I kind of find it funny, like, this is the time, not 1 million, 4 million, sorry, 4 million people have signed it.
4 million?
Have signed it, yeah. So I kind of find it funny that it took the case and all this for Warner Brothers now to retroactively, like, scale back and distance themselves from it. But the moment all this came out, like, Johnny Depp, you're out of Fantastic Beasts. You're out of Pirates of the Caribbean. You lost your Dior contract. You lost like everything. But now they want to be pragmatic and take it slow with Amber Heard. Like, oh, we'll reduce her part in Aquaman. Oh, now more stuff came out. Oh, now we're gonna just remove it entirely. Like with Johnny Depp, it was instantaneous. We're not gonna look at all the information. It was just, you're gone. With Amber Heard is like, oh, we're going to take our time and actually figure this thing out, which I feel like is not fair in the most part. Because it's clear that both of them do have some kind of issue, but for Johnny Depp to just be cut off cold turkey with nothing, and Amber Heard, they're drip feeding it is, yeah. So
yeah, it's a complicated situation. Okay, so let's talk about what we've been watching this week.
You know, for me, you know, I think around every guy around the puberty time, you become really fascinated with cars. And it just, for me, it kind of coincided with this year is like the 40th anniversary of Smokey and the Bandit, one of my favorite movies. So I took time to rewatch it. Got Burt Reynolds and Sally Field. This is not like Longest Yard Burt Reynolds. This is like peak Burt Reynolds, where he's like this cocky, suave, like, I drive the hell out of this car. These cops ain't gonna catch me. It's okay. So prefaces, if you're black, it's really Southern. Not Southern as in racist, but Southern as in Southern. Like the sheriff plays that stereotypical loudmouth, you know, Southern cop, and you end up rooting for, you know, Smokey, Burt Reynolds. Like, how can you not watch this movie and root for Burt Reynolds? So, yeah, wonderful movie. It's got one of the most iconic cars in film history. It's a Trans Am. I always wanted one. My aunt had one when I was a kid in Florida. She had, like, a white Trans Am. Like, how, my great aunt. Like, how? And she still has it. And she's, like 90 years old, 80 years old. She still has an all-white Trans Am. Like, what are you doing with that thing? But, yeah, so... Yeah, that was me celebrating, you know, the 40th anniversary by watching All Smoke in the Bandit. If you haven't seen it, In Your Car Guy, it's like one of the, like I said, it's standout, you know, iconic film cars. You know, go watch it. So,
or a car girly.
Or a car girl. I'm sorry. If you're into cars in general, like this is one of the most iconic film cars. Go watch it.
So I'm watching The Wild season 2. It's not, the acting is truly painful and the dialogue is so cheesy, but I'm watching with my friend, so I'm doing it for her. Okay, I am also watching The Johnny Depp Case. Been watching it like every day. We finally got cross-examination for Amber Heard, so that was good. Like, talk about entertaining television. Like, that was a moment. And it continues tomorrow, and I will be watching all of it. And then I watched this 3-hour YouTube video. Can I just say that, like, YouTubers who, like, make, like, critiques, who make, like, critical, like, social analysis, like, their videos will be the full length of like a real movie. And I will sit there and watch it. And you know, I hate long movies, but for some reason, I just like, I don't know. I will watch like a 3-hour YouTube video and I can't understand why, but anyways, I'm counting it because it was 3 hours and some change. I am going to count it as media, if not a movie or television show. It was very long. But it was by a YouTuber called Traplore Ross, who does videos on like hip-hop and hip-hop culture. And it was about the demise of Kim and Kanye's marriage. 3 hours long. It was very interesting. And it was good because it was like up to date. So we're getting like Pete Davidson, we're getting Julia Fox in that whole moment. Like, we're getting like all of the like newer stuff tied in with all the old stuff. And like the build up to that and how Kanye literally like reinvented the Kardashians and like gave them like some type of respectability, and then that ended, and yeah, it just goes into everything. And I thought it was funny and well done, and yeah, I literally have been watching like hour long, 2 hours, 3 hour YouTube videos. So I watched one about Euphoria. I watched two about Euphoria because for some reason there's still things in my brain that haven't been processed yet with that show. So I'm processing it through these YouTube videos. But anyways, that's irrelevant. But yeah, that's what I watched this week. So I will watch a movie this coming week. Sorry, that didn't happen. Okay, so that's it from us. We hope you're taking care of yourselves and having a good week. Make sure to check out all of our social media, follow us on Letterboxd, and support us if you can. And we will see you guys in the next episode. Goodbye.
Au revoir.